cliffcentral.com. Good day and welcome to Disrupt with Mpumi Nhlapo on Cliff Central, brought to you by T-Systems. Today I'm joined by a man who calls himself a strong team motivator and a coach, Werner Lindemann. Welcome, Werner. How are you?
Mpumi, thanks very much. Thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you for joining us today. And thank you to our sponsors, T-Systems, once again, for making this platform possible. It really is great to have the opportunity to talk about disruption. And I think the media space in particular is an area that's really experienced a lot of disruption, Werner. I mean, what have you seen?
I think what's quite interesting is that the media industry is not so different than if you go and talk about banking, telecommunications, retail. Everything is getting disrupted today by changes in technology.
Yes.
So technology for me is the big disruptor. It changes how industries engage with consumers. It changes how industries drive different revenue models. It changes how industries are actually disrupting other industries' boundaries.
Absolutely.
And for me, the interesting thing about the media industry is that if you go back, media is probably the one area that's both in the B2B, in the B2C space.
Absolutely.
Because it engages with big brands. That said, it engages with the consumer journey on the other side.
At the same time.
Now, what the media industry has ahead of any other industry is that it had to play both these roles in the past. So it had to embrace technology that's been disrupting other big businesses like banking and telecommunication, and apply that in terms of allowing brands to engage with consumers over the media platforms. And this whole disruption in the African market with mobile technology, with the advent of broadband, has actually created new avenues for the media industry. And I mean, Cliff Central is a great example of that.
Yes.
In terms of how the media industry connect consumers, like-minded consumers, with brands that would like to engage or to advertise to them.
Werner, I'm looking at your CV. You've been selling solutions in the industry for over 20 years. We were talking earlier, you hail from Bloemfontein, but living in Johannesburg since 1991, you said. Mm. And you've worked in the IT industry. You've been in the media space for quite some time. So quite a diverse background that you come from. You're currently serving as the MD of MediaMark, which is the media sales agency. Prior to that, you were the commercial manager or director at Kagiso Media.
Yes.
Can you just talk a little bit about your background from a technology and a media space, and how did you get to where you are today before we get into tackling, you know, the subject around media and disruption?
Yes. So I actually have got I'm an industrial engineer by training. So and it was totally by accident that I got into the IT industry. IBM acquired PwC Consulting in the early 2000s globally.
Okay.
And that's how I got involved in IBM. Now, the one thing that I think the IT industry has actually helped me with, you remember I've just talked about this disruption, how technology is disrupting industries.
Absolutely.
There was no disrespect to people that's been in the industry for 20, 30 years in the media industry. I think the jump for me from IT to media has been made easier by this disruption in the industry.
Yes.
Because I understand how tech is disrupting industries. If you talk about banks are becoming telcos now. F&B has started with their own MVNO. Telcos are becoming insurers.
Yes.
I mean, Vodacom is providing insurance packages, unbelievably innovative insurance packages to their customers. You can now buy insurance for a day. So if you decide you want to go and skydive, you buy insurance for a day from Vodacom.
Fantastic.
And that is how tech is disrupting industry. So this shift for me to media with 10, 12 years of IT background and how I've seen how tech is disrupting industry has actually helped me in making the step change in the media industry, because I understand how tech is starting to change industries.
Absolutely.
And the traditional media is the traditional media. So it's been easy for me to understand this transition that media industry is busy making, and that's probably why the shareholders have decided to ask me to run MediaMark.
To run MediaMark.
Yeah.
It's a big challenge. I want to read a couple of things to you here. So the World Economic Forum reports that Facebook is about to hit 2 billion users, right? It says that Facebook is fast approaching the point at which it will be used regularly by a third of the planet. So that's about 2 billion people. And these are the results from the first quarter, and that it had 1.94 billion users, 17% more than in the previous year. It also talks about the time, and to say that the growth in the world population is having a material impact on the performance of Facebook, which is why we see them really aggressively trying to grow connectivity.
Yes.
Because it'll increase the reach for their platform. And we look at it in 2005, Facebook had 6 million users that were active. So in roughly 10 years, they've grown from 6 million users and to a third of the global population.
Yes.
That obviously creates a lot of pressure for traditional media.
Yes.
And not just radio, not just television, not just outdoor, but across the board. Can you talk to me, you know, as the MD of MediaMark, in the context of what's happening in your industry and how the likes of the social media giants like Facebook, whether they complement or create competition or a threat for your business?
Yes. So maybe if I just take a step back, it comes back to the proliferation of broadband. If you go and look at what's happening in Africa, in the last year, Africa for the first time has got more internet connections than either Western Europe or North America. Africa has got more mobile subscribers than or the third largest mobile subscriber base in the world after Eastern Asia and Southeast Asia.
Sure.
So those things are having a massive impact on how people engage with media. Now, that's just park that for a second.
Okay.
The second interesting fact is if you go and look at the South African connected consumer.
Okay.
So connected consumer, somebody's got access to a smartphone. 60% of South African adults have got access to a smartphone. So put that into context.
Okay.
The connected consumer in South Africa today consumes 50% more content on a daily basis than they did 3 years ago.
50% more content on a daily basis.
So let me break that down. On average, about 4 hours of radio, less than 3 hours of television. If you've got a mobile phone, about 3 hours of content on your mobile phone on a daily basis.
Wow.
And if you've got access to a laptop, which only 20% of South African adults have, that's another 2 hours on your laptop in a day. Okay, that's 12 hours of content consumption.
When do we work?
Hopefully in between. What you must also remember, some of this is multi-screen.
Okay.
So it's multi-screen. So I will sit in front of the television, which I rarely do, but I will have my phone there and my laptop.
Okay, I get you.
Or people like My Perfect Wedding on a Sunday night will be on social media while My Perfect Wedding is on,
yes.
and they'll multi-screen it.
Okay.
Now here's the shift that's happening. I think traditional media companies have thought about these new media players, the Googles of the world, the Facebooks of the world, etc., as serious competition. Yes, they are competition because they dominate about 70% of the market in terms of digital media.
Okay.
But the unsuccessful ones have not been able to leverage this as a funnel to their traditional media environment.
So, okay, elaborate on that.
So a radio station, I'll use a radio station as an example. A radio station that's successful have got a full circle of how he engages with the consumer. He's got on-air stuff that the consumer listens to it, either in the car or on his cell phone or on his laptop or whatever. That content, he then replicates in the online space. But he replicates it differently because you and I consume content differently when we hear it than when we read it on an online mat. So,
absolutely.
So it needs to be optimized in terms of search. It needs to be optimized in terms of the type of words we look for, etc. When a radio presenter talks about it, he says, why don't you go and look at it on my Facebook page? So first thing, I go and look at the Facebook page of this segment.
Yes.
When I click on that article, what must the article do? It must redirect me to the radio station website.
Yes.
Because then I bring people into my community of why people actually consume my content. So for me as a media player, Facebook is a fantastic funnel to broaden the capability of building this community of trusted consumers that want to engage with you as a brand.
See what you mean.
So I actually think this is extremely exciting, because you can use these new media players to actually bolster your engagement and broaden your community of engagement with your media platform, whether it's a digital or a traditional media platform.
Okay. Now, let's take then a step back to when you were heading up Kagiso Media, obviously running radio stations. The digital platforms coming on board, the podcasters coming on board. How has that shifted that space?
I will use again an example. About 2 years ago, when I was still at Kagiso Media, we visited my other shareholder, a company called Lagardère, the French media company.
Okay.
We visited their operations in Poland. They've got an array of radio stations there that's under a banner called Eurozet. And we went to go and see what they did in the digital space, because we were quite interested. The Polish, they've got about 70% internet penetration in Poland versus South Africa, about 53%. So, and they've got lots of broadband in their home. So we wanted to learn from them.
And I would assume the costs are a lot lower.
The costs are much lower. So you will pay for 400 Rand in a month, you will have paid television, cable, so with multiple channels, cell phone, use as much as you like, plus data use as much as you like for 400 Rand.
400
a month.
Bucks.
400 bucks in a month. Okay.
Sure.
This is what we pay a year. 1,000 bucks for a cell phone, 900 bucks if you still want to do it, whatever, etc. So there's three things that we found out about augmenting a traditional media platform or a digital media platform with what you need to do. The first thing is the tech at the background. So if you're a connected consumer, what's an important thing for you when you open an app? This thing must be instant.
Absolutely.
MobiSite. Instant.
Absolutely.
So the back end tech to get that right and set that up properly, and the content management system on top of that is very important. Second thing, user experience. If you use an app today, they say the average, I read an article, the average smartphone user have got 27 apps on his phone, and he downloads less than 3 new apps in a year that he consistently use. Because if you download an app, you don't like it, you delete it.
Yeah.
Okay. So if that experience, that user experience on that app or the Mobi site or the internet site or what you hear or what you see is not great, you're gonna have a once-off visitor.
And then you're done.
That's the thing for us in the media industry. You have one chance to capture the imagination of a consumer, because you've got so many options. Third thing, content. So, and this is where I used the example earlier. If you have content on a traditional platform, if you've got content on a digital platform versus a mobile site versus an app, all those content, that content need to be published exactly for the channel.
Okay.
Because people consume content different on different channels.
Okay.
And that's why you need to capture the imagination of the consumer. How do you do it? There's lots of studies around the world. You capture somebody's imagination when you've got either a picture or video or whatever that they can look at. Another study that I read, I can't remember what was the source, says that 60% globally, this is now a global statement, I'm not going to extrapolate this to South Africa.
Okay.
Globally, more than 60% of all videos shorter than 25 minutes get watched on a mobile device.
So over 50%?
Over 60%.
60 of video content that's shorter than
25 minutes get watched on a mobile device.
Wow.
So
that changes the game.
It changes the game. So in this whole disruption that the media industry needs to drive, if video is not core to your strategy in terms of how you engage with consumers, it doesn't matter whether you're a radio station. Video needs to be core.
I see what you're saying.
And it's not about filming. I see sometimes on these television programs in the morning, they film on one of these channels, they film a radio team
in the studio. Yes.
That's not content. Content is snackable stuff that captures the imagination of the consumer. You will not get a consumer checking a radio studio for 2 hours.
No.
And by the way, I just want to make this statement. People talk about mobile as the second screen. Mobile is the first screen.
Absolutely.
I don't see people walking to conferences with a television under their arm. This is. The mobile
primary.
Phone is the first screen now. On the African continent, South Africa, the latest stats is 78-79% of all web pages open is done on a mobile phone. West Africa, I was 2 weeks, 3 weeks ago in Ghana. It's more than 80% in Ghana and Nigeria. Similar stats in East Africa and Kenya and those places. So this is becoming the primary screen or the first screen.
And we know that, I mean, the stats are even higher for internet usage in terms of the first time people experience the internet is on a mobile.
Exactly.
I think it's into the 90s percentages from that perspective. Okay, so Vadna, I mean, you've had a broad, industry experience, I would guess, IBM is a technology company coming into the media space or coming into the commercial side of media and then now into the sales side of media.
Mm.
Let's talk a little bit about then disruption. It's a relatively new term, and I mention it every week on the show to say, but I think disruptive energy has always been there. So in terms of your own experience, I mean, did you feel that disruptive impetus there at the time that you were still within the technology space and then coming now into the media environment?
I think the people around me probably think I'm the disruptor.
Which is why we've got you here.
So, and if you think about, I'll share with you these four pillars that we have built our strategy now around. And if you think about those things, it's exactly those disruptors.
Okay.
Okay. The first one is mobile. So everybody talks about being a digital-first company. A digital-first company allow you to come to the party. A mobile-first company allow you to sell stuff at the party. So so if you don't think about how you transform, and this is not just a media industry discussion, but how you transform as mobile-first,
okay,
you're not going to have a place at the party very soon.
Okay. So let's just dwell on that a little bit. Mobile first means what? That I build my website to be compatible for mobile first? What does that mean tangibly if I'm running a large retail organization or I'm running a large manufacturing business? What does that look like for me?
So let's talk about a retailer. Mobile first in a retailer means that you need to have, like what the Woolies of this world have done, you need to have an app where people can go in, they can buy stuff, they can get their Smart Shopper points on it, they can get all, so Pick and Pay Smart Shopper, but they can get all their rewards on it and do the different things.
Okay.
It means that mobile first means that you need to be able to provide things like gamification.
Okay. We spoke about that earlier.
Yeah. You need to be able to do things like gamification or what some people call that commerce marketing to engage consumers on a different platform with you. You need to be able to drive loyalty through mobile engagement. I don't want to go and look for a coupon, or I don't want to go and have to print out something.
Yeah.
I want to go to the till, redeem my Smart Shopper points or my reward points from my mobile device with a QR code.
Absolutely.
And that's how, or I must be able, if I've got a feature phone, to be able to get an SMS, which I can then...
And transact based on that.
So it's not, we mustn't get fixated about the smartphone, because it's not just about the smartphone. In Africa, feature phones are still rife.
Okay.
And I think that's what it means. That play a role to connect brands with consumers. I need to be able to help a consumer take his campaign beyond the traditional media campaign. So how do we engage a consumer by providing them to participate? I provide them with a benefit.
Okay.
So for example, I now can do stuff on behalf of Vodacom because they've signed me up.
Okay.
Or I've signed them up or somebody else. So I can go, I ran a campaign for... Let's use a retailer again. I ran a campaign for ShopRite.
Okay.
To participate, I'll give you a benefit to participate. I'm going to give you 100 megs of data for free. If you've got a smartphone, or I'll give you airtime for free, 10 rands or 20 rands of airtime for free if you participate.
Okay.
So suddenly I've captured your imagination as a consumer because you want that that benefit.
Yes.
And I've got you in the game.
Okay.
Okay. Now, to be able to win stuff, I provide gamification. So gamification, there's a Mobi site that I run. We've got 6 different gamification plays that we have. Run a Mobi site with some gamification. Or if you have got a feature phone, I run my game with USSD with you.
Okay.
Okay. So I sent you a thing. You select one of the options and I sent you a next thing.
Yeah.
And you get rewards like that.
And you engaged.
Suddenly, I say to you, okay, do you want to go and redeem your voucher or whatever? Come to the store. Suddenly, I've got a consumer. I've got feet in the store. ShopRite wants me to get feet in the store. And there I've used mobile together with traditional media as the loud hailer to get, because I still use radio, to entice the consumer to participate through games and through rewards, and I've got them feet in the store.
Ah, I see. And that's where you were saying that in terms of the new social media platforms, they become an enabler and not necessarily a competitor because you're taking it outside the digital space into the feet in the store environment as well.
So maybe let me just take a step back. A traditional media campaign would be, why don't you take some generics and some power spots on my radio station or my television station, we do a nice ad.
Yeah.
Now what I'm saying is I use radio or television as the loud hailer.
Okay.
Tell my consumers, there's some exciting stuff. Go and check this website out.
Okay.
I get them onto the digital site and I give them something for free to participate.
Okay.
Next step is I give them rewards that they need to go and redeem in the store. And I get the objective of the retailer feed through the store. And that's how we do campaigns. In the past, it was a little bit of a prayer and a hope.
Interesting. Interesting. And would you say that side of things is growing dramatically? Are we going to see a lot more activity in that space?
I think so. And it's about again, using stuff that entice the consumer. So you remember I made use of this term snackable content.
Mm, mm.
A consumer has got so many options out there. So it's the way you engage with a consumer through content that engages him and want him to be part of this community of content that you get to generate. It is about content. If you just go back to those pillars that I talked about, the first one is mobile. And in that third pillar, the third pillar for me is content. It is about the ability of brands today to build content that consumers want to engage with.
Okay. Now, if I look at, making personal for myself, if I look at my Facebook feed, for example, I mean, there's a lot of stuff there, even from different brands and different people trying to, and it's all marked sponsored content, etc. Are we not going to get to a point where people start to resist and push back because there'll be just so much coming at us in those environments? How do you leverage it without getting into an environment where it's just now, people start to ignore it and it's just content?
So there's lots of stats around ad blockers around the world where people actually start switching things off.
Mm.
So the sponsored content on Facebook, I actually switch off.
Okay.
Because it clutters my social media. It's not something that I want to engage with on social media.
Yes.
And that's why this some symbiosis between traditional content and digital is so important.
Okay.
I read, I'm making a presentation tomorrow at the Marketing and Derby here at Wanderers. And at that, I'm talking about the connected consumer. Now, here's an interesting stat for you. Millennials that everybody talks, that I don't see as the only connected consumer, but millennials that everybody talk about, actually don't mind radio advertising, as an example.
Okay.
Well, they don't find it intrusive on a study that was done.
Okay.
Okay. Here's the interesting thing. 60 and 70% of people that hear something on radio, they follow up within 24 hours by going to look for it online.
Interesting.
So by driving just digital marketing or digital advertising, you actually have got a chance of irritating consumers. And that's when consumers starting using ad blockers.
Yeah.
When you combine it with traditional media, the ROI is much better. Because then it's seen as non-intrusive. I then still have the choice to go and look for that thing online.
And I think
this combination of traditional and digital media, and combination of traditional and social media is where brands need to think about. But then it needs to be, you've got one chance.
Yes.
You've got one chance.
You still have one chance.
One chance. The content that people then go and engage on and go and look for needs to be content that captures their imagination. Because if the content is not good content, you've lost them.
Completely.
Yeah.
And now let's talk a little bit about your movements into the rest of our continent. You mentioned Ghana as an area that you're growing the business. Is it still very regional, country specific in terms of radio and media?
Yeah, it's very regional. The Ghanaian market has actually overtraded.
Okay.
There's 240 radio stations in Ghana for a population of just over 20 million.
240 radio stations. So it's, and all traditional radio.
Traditional radio. So what we've started doing with the radio stations that we represent there, we've started focusing very heavily on digital and social media to engage with consumers. But it is about having that consumer engagement that drives a value proposition to the advertisers.
Okay.
And that's what we help them with. But it's a very, very cluttered market. Ghana is a good place to start, nice place to do business in. Mm. There's a lot of the FMCG retail companies that's out there. It's becoming more sophisticated.
Okay.
There's now starting to get market data available. But we need to broaden the channels that we represent there to provide a one-stop shop to advertisers. And that's where we're going towards. Yeah.
But now this question around the digital players, Cliff Central being a digital radio station, it's accessible anywhere.
Yeah.
I guess maybe I'm trying to tap into your thoughts around how those will perform or what would be the differentiator that the digital world would bring relative to a traditional radio, because I can understand language issues, so there might be some native languages, et cetera, that are spoken, but is there still, are you seeing that space is growing?
You see, for me, media is about two things. It is media first, is about creating a community of like-minded consumers or content consumers.
Yes.
Because people listen to a radio or a television station because they like the content they get there and they feel it's similar consumers that engage on that
like-minded
platform.
Yes.
So I think media, whether you a traditional radio station or a digital radio station, that needs to be where you drive the way you consistently drive your engagement with consumers and consistently drive your consumer growth.
Yes.
The second thing for me is about the content and the in the television space, they talk about content that travels.
Okay.
So if you do a program like Generations, so Generations have had some risky stuff on television in the past. Generations will never work in Kenya. The reason why Generations will never work in Kenya, it's a very religious, very conservative consumer out there.
Okay.
So they don't like risky television stuff.
Okay.
So whether it's overly sexual content mainly around sexual content.
Okay.
Now, and I think that for me, coming back to Cliff Central as an example, I'm wondering whether the Cliff Central will get a community of like-minded consumers than what they serve here in South Africa.
Okay.
And whether they have content that will be relevant for the local Ghanaians.
Okay.
Because you listen to content on radio, whether it's traditional or digital, because you want to hear what's going on in your immediate area or in your country or in your continent.
Okay.
And I think that's the barrier for content that travels.
Okay. So this notion that content needs to travel is relevant, unless, of course, you frame yourself around a very specific community you want to serve that community and you're quite content.
So a great example is gospel content. Gospel content travels easily. West Africa, South Africa, take Soweto TV as an example, Dumisa One Gospel, and actually, I've got a lot of content from international churches on there. So whether it's from Brazil, etc., there's massive churches there. Gospel content travels as an example because it's, again, a community of like-minded.
It's an established community.
Exactly.
From that perspective. Yeah. Okay. So, Vanna, I want to just maybe shift gear a little bit and talk about media in terms of, I guess, some of the news we've heard around fake news and what's really a trending topic and, you know, discussions around the influence or not that Facebook might have had with the U.S. elections.
Yeah.
We know BBM was quite central to the discussions of what happened in Egypt and in Cairo
yes.
a few years back. Is this a topic that is gaining more relevance within the media space around what's real, what's not? And because, you know, now we're in an era where it's not journalists that are editing news. It's really user-generated content yes. that finds its way. What's happening in your industry around this?
I think brands are very nervous.
Okay.
I don't know whether you saw the article that was published, the announcement that came out about a month ago where the global chief marketing officer of Procter & Gamble basically decided to pull all advertising off digital platforms.
No, I didn't see that.
And there was two reasons behind it. They were worried that their brands are starting to get connected or associated with fake news.
Okay.
The second thing is, at that stage, there was this whole hoo-ha in the industry that I don't, you know, you understand the concept around bots, that yes. there was actually more bots than real people on both Google and on Facebook. And when people did the investigation around it, it looks like there was four bots for every one real person that was counted on platforms like Facebook.
Impressions or views or whatever.
So 80% of the impressions were bots. Now, just...
Sorry, I just want to latch on that because that's, I don't think that's something that... People, so basically we're saying that there are accounts that are set up by robots yep. that function or mimic people's behavior, but yes. it's not actual people.
Correct.
And or what would be the incentive for someone to do that? Just for malice or what?
The incentive would be, so when you go and sell internet or digital advertising,
okay.
you go and sell it on the number of impressions
yes.
that your site pulls, the number of page views, etc. So if you... inflate it four times, you look like you're a massive site. You've got lots of views, but you're actually inflating the reality. So just think if you or I own a radio station, we go to Unilever, we say, we've got 5 million listeners. Pay us because you for the reach.
Yes.
And in fact, I've got 4 million fake listeners, and I actually got only 1 million listeners.
I see.
So Unilever will come to you and me and they'll say, give us back our money.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I'm actually surprised that nobody's come and asked Facebook or Google for all their money back.
Okay, so then there's this study that says that there's a proliferation of bots, yeah. right?
So what's happened is some of the agencies, I was actually with some of the Group M guys, Mediacom, etc.
Yes.
They have now brought out a decree to say that if you can't prove on your website that it's a real user that actually does a view or a click through, etc., we won't use your websites anymore. So there's now guys are doing massive investments in technology deployed to prove that it's real people that's either on their websites or doing the impressions or the views, etc., etc. So, but it just shows you how quickly something can get out of control because people are chasing a number to prove that they are the biggest sites out there.
Yes, yes. And so now around the topic of then fake news related to obviously fake people or yeah. fake users, but really the topic around what's real, what's not, and what we're consuming yeah. on these platforms, both digital and of course even radio, I guess, and TV yeah. to a certain extent.
So I think the same thing will start to happen where brands will say, if you can't control the news or the realness around the news that you have on your site or the content that you have on your site, I can't associate my brand with it.
Mm.
So I think fake news is actually creating a problem for sites that is big proponents of user-generated content that links advertising to it.
Okay.
Because as soon as you link advertising to it, you need to have an accountability.
Yes.
Okay. So I think this whole thing is going to shake out over time, but brands will not want to be associated with sites that's known for fake news or sites that fake news comes out in the end.
Mm, so something that's going to really, I guess, have more focus around controlling it and managing it.
But just think about it. Facebook, I'm not hammering Facebook. Let's use any other site. Today's internet sites are reliant on advertising revenue. That's okay. How they make their money.
Yes.
Okay. So 80% of as advertising revenue, there might be other sponsorships or sponsorship, again, advertising revenue, paid for content. Mm. There might be some e-commerce play. So that is other generated money. But 80% of these sites make their money through advertising. So if they can't guarantee a brand that there's not going to be fake news that damages the brand that's either sponsoring of advertising, I think they've got trouble brewing in their backyard and their core revenue streams.
Mm. And data privacy or information privacy, I mean, you deal with consumers, so yeah. More and more we're worried about what are they doing with my information. You know, I guess if I ask the question differently, as an advertiser, you want to know more about me. Right? And as a consumer, I don't necessarily want to tell you everything about me.
Yeah.
Where do you find the healthy balance?
Look, I think the basics, if you go and look at the legislation in South Africa around Poppy, the basics is that you need to give a consumer the ability to opt in.
Okay.
Okay. I think some of these big players have taken it too far. I've opted in, but I don't really know what I've opted in. How many people do you speak to on a daily basis that says, I have emailed somebody at Cliff Central. The next moment, I get a Facebook recommendation that I should connect to this person.
Hmm.
So how did that happen? Facebook checked what email I've sent, and now I want to connect you on Facebook to this person.
Yeah.
That's intrusive. That's intrusive. And I think that's taking it a step too far.
Mm, mm.
So I think...
And I mean, not Facebook, but whatever email, bulk email,
yes.
I mean, whatever it could have been. Yeah.
And I think brands, if you again, take the big global brands, I'll use Unilever as an example because I work a lot with them. I mean, Unilever really takes the high ground. They try not to be intrusive, but in same instance, they want to try and gather as much information about the consumers that they need to take their brands to or engage their brands with.
Mm.
So I think it's a very fine line, and currently that fine line is very gray.
It is, because, I mean, we talk about this age of the consumer, hyper-personalization, all of these things. I mean, what that means is that you need to gather much more data about me as a person. And I maybe will never answer the question fully, but I wonder, is this something to be left in the hands of the platforms and the advertisers? You know, sometimes it becomes tricky when government gets too involved. Well,
a consumer can actually decide to opt out. So if you don't want to see any of these advertisement anymore, you put in an ad blocker. That's very simple.
Mm.
And it's your right to put in an ad blocker. But sometimes I'm actually keen to see what happens with brands that I research out there. So planning a trip to Europe or looking for a hotel, maybe there's something that pops up that's cheaper or better for
me. And it helps you.
And it helps you. In that instance, that's not intrusive. Because it comes up in a banner ad or an ad on the website. But as soon as it becomes doing things like looking at what emails you sent and then engaging you on a different level, that's where I think it gets close to stepping over the line.
Absolutely. I want to ask you a quick question. I read an article that Coca-Cola, the chief marketing officer, you might have seen the same article, he retired or was retired after many years as the CMO, and they've actually taken away the CMO role and they've now got a chief growth officer.
Okay.
And that's the new terminology they're using. And I guess the thinking is that the return on marketing was not translating. You know, I think Coca-Cola's revenues dropped by $1 billion or more year on year. And so they felt that, you know, marketing, as they were executing it then, was not having the composite return. I'm asking myself the question around media. And I mean, is that transformation happening in the media space to enable marketing to become this growth engine within organizations?
So we've just gone through an interesting exercise in our business where we looked at how do we productize things. Say, for example, and this whole thing that we brought Vodacom on board has actually triggered this. So I said to the guys in our business, so how do we actually integrate Vodacom in terms of the package that we take to the market, or the way we position our brands? And we started down a productization journey, and we've turned the tables, or the table on its head, where we said in the past we'll create a product and we'll go and push it in the market. We've gone from the other side. We said, what's the marketer objectives?
Okay.
So typical marketer objectives might be, I want to do customer retention. I want to do customer acquisition. I want to do brand awareness. I want to do product awareness. Maybe it's a product positioning, et cetera, et cetera. We've come up, and one of them is actually CSI, or good news stories.
Okay.
So we've come up with 9 in working with our sister research company called KLA. We've come up with 9 marketer objectives. And we're now designing our product set to address marketer objectives. Now, if you go and disseminate this marketer objectives into levers, 7 of the 9 marketer objectives talks about growth, revenue growth.
Okay.
And it comes back to addressing revenue growth in a corporate environment. So to answer your question, I think the fact Coca-Cola can call it what it wants, but it is about growth. Marketing should drive business growth, or should drive consumer expansion or share of wallet expansion.
Yes.
If it's a customer acquisition strategy, and I think they've actually hit the nail on the head by thinking about what's the objectives that they want to drive out of marketing. So I don't know whether this is going to create now a new trend in terms of what marketing should do.
Yeah.
But I actually think if you don't look at it at the marketer objectives when you start down a campaign and the outcome that you want to drive, you're on the wrong path as a marketer.
And do you believe the digital world is better equipped to support that? Or is it just an evolution that media would have always adapted?
No, I think it's the combination of things. I still think there's a massive opportunity for traditional media. But it's how you combine traditional and digital media to extend reach curves, as an example, in terms of consumers, or to extend the consumer base that you would have touched in a traditional media environment. So if you think about the example earlier of how I talked about getting feet through the store in a retailer.
Yes.
So just think about the following. So now I run a traditional media campaign on one of the radio stations. 1.5 million listeners. I use the radio station's loud hailer. I do some digital with it. But then I go to Vodacom and I say, we're targeting women between 24 and 35. Vodacom, how many of them do you have? All right. Out of our 37 million consumers that we have on mobile lines, of them, 9 million. Okay. I then augment my campaign with digital and bulk SMS and whatever else I want to do on the Vodacom platform. Suddenly, I touch 10 million consumers, and I extend my reach curve beyond just the traditional media. And for me, that's the combination of traditional together with digital as a call to action, together with mobile to extend and amplify what you're trying to do, is where marketing engagement and campaigns should go to.
Okay, I get it fully. So, I mean, yes, it's been a wonderful conversation, really engaging. Before we get to wrap up, I want to tackle 3 subjects with you.
Yes.
Okay. The first one, and I normally end with this one, but I want to start with it because I think it's relevant right now. You know, this era, and you come from technology, we're hearing more about bots, robotics, artificial intelligence, and it seems like more and more the space for the human being is shrinking. Okay, to see him on the surface. Mm. And that will naturally have an impact on consumer patterns going forward. Where do you see that going?
You know what? If you go and do a little bit of research, one of the most sought after jobs today is a job called a data scientist.
Yes. In fact, I've had a couple of conversations on that. Okay. Yeah.
A data scientist didn't exist in 2004.
Okay.
It didn't exist. There wasn't a job like that.
Yeah.
There's an interesting video that I watched not long ago on YouTube that talks about kids in school. I've got two daughters in school. Today are getting educated for jobs that don't exist yet. So I think that this thing that started with the Industrial Revolution,
yes,
and our data, there's more data that got generated in the last 2 years worldwide than everything before that.
Yep.
Okay. So it creates new opportunities. It creates opportunity for new things and innovation. I think there's mundane jobs that's going to disappear.
Okay.
But it's about, so what do we do with this data? How do we engage in different business opportunities? How do we engage different with consumers, etc.? So people that's willing to embrace this change, that's willing to open themselves up for new opportunities. There will always be opportunities knocking around the next corner. We will do other things as human beings 10 years from now than what we do today.
Absolutely. And so on that note then, your definition of disruption.
So I will talk about my definition of disruption in the media industry.
Okay.
My definition of disruption in the media industry is to provide a platform where advertisers can engage with like-minded consumers through the right content. And it might sound like traditional media,
okay,
but it also sounds like new media. It sounds like digital. It sounds like mobile engagement.
Okay.
So it's about understanding what content you need to create to develop this community of like-minded individuals that brands want to engage with. That's what disruption is about.
And I guess what technology has done is given people more power to place themselves with like-minded people.
Exactly.
So by being able to create, whether it's a Facebook group or...
Exactly.
So people now have, I guess, more control or the more better ability to position themselves with like-minded people.
You know what? As a media player, people always ask, so what do you do as a media player? I actually connect brands with consumers that they want to engage with. Now, if I can use technology to do that in a better way and give them access to a broader like-minded set of consumers, then I actually do my job.
Fantastic. And last, but absolutely not least, your vision for South Africa and then for the continent. Broadly, your vision.
Hmm. You know, I'll go back to the comment that I made earlier. I was mesmerized when I saw this latest study by We Are Social, where for the first time ever, as I said, there's more mobile connections in Africa, Africa's got the third most mobile connections in the world. There's more people connected to the internet in Africa than in Western Europe or in America. I want to see how Africans use this new wave of connectedness to leapfrog the world out there. And we've seen it again and again in our country, as well as in across Africa. I'll just give you one example. In 1995, mobile phone came out in South Africa. We didn't have 15 years of GSM-1.
No.
We started on GSM-2 because we didn't have to have that legacy.
Yeah.
So everything we do is about, we're streets ahead of Europe because we don't have this legacy of broadband. We on mobile. So the next era in terms of tech belongs to Africa and Asia. That's where innovation is going to be created.
And we must leverage that connectedness to...
We must.
Werner, on that note, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure speaking to you today. Thank you, Werner,
the MD
of MediaMark. We wish you all the best in your endeavors. I know you're looking to expand into other locations to grow with your brands. You've mentioned a few of them today, which is fantastic. Thank you to our sponsors, T-Systems, for making the platform available once again. To follow up on the story and to get more information on our podcasts, you can go to www.t-systems.co.za. Thank you very much. Up next is The Good Stuff. Have a wonderful day. Cliffcentral.com.